we need a new open for it, because now we have 75 Division I men's lacrosse teams.
You're right. Do you have any ideas for what you would want to say? Do we have a catchphrase?
Do we have a catchphrase? I don't know. Catchphrase? Don't quit.
Welcome back to the Quick Restart Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined once again by Quinn Kesnick and Quint. We are in full motion, my friend. It is officially college lacrosse season. We've got meaningful results. We've got crazy performances. We have got triangles of teams beating one another, and we've got a lot to talk about, but we are going to start with what I'm sure everybody listening to this podcast cares most about. Some call it the Charles Street Massacre. It is also the Battle of the Quick Restart Podcast. The Loyola Greyhounds, 10-7 victors over the Johns Hopkins Blue Jays at the Ridley Athletic Complex on Saturday afternoon in front of about 3,700 fans in frigid temperatures. It was a really meaningful game for the Greyhounds as they bounced back from a season-opening loss to Virginia. Meanwhile, the Blue Jays fall to 1-1 after having beaten Towson in their season debut at Homewood the week prior. A big game kind of all across the board from Loyola offensively, but I really do think it was limiting the Blue Jays to 7 goals. Goalie Sam Schaefer made 15 stops, and this was a Loyola Greyhound defense playing without a number of starters. Cam Wires was missed the game due to a violation of team rules. Matt Hughes has still not played as he recovers from injury, but it was a yeoman's performance. On the flip side, the Blue Jays were playing with a hampered and then ultimately without Joey Epstein as he tried to give it a go, but did not look himself.
They've won now, the Greyhounds, 6 of 7 in the series, including 3 in a row. And for Johns Hopkins, it was a case where they got off to a slow start and then really never bounced back. Third quarter was bad as well. So Loyola won all the matchups. Hopkins had trouble running by guys and getting quality shots. I thought Ryan McNulty at the long pole was maybe the player of the game. We've always loved him here, I think, on this podcast, Foy. But this guy nationally, I think, ranks up there, if not the best, because he can cover. He also gets grounders, and he's a threat in transition. He's the three-pronged long pole. So many times now, we give credit to long poles who have gaudy stats offensively or ground ball-wise, but they can't cover. Ryan McNulty can cover. He's a great player, and he was dominant. And I thought Sam Schaefer, when he was tested, rose up. I don't think there's any concern now in terms of Loyola's goaltending as there was maybe when the season started, coming off three years of Jake Stover. Big win. And Hopkins has made major questions. What's the health of Joey Epstein? What's the health of Alex Kincannon? They got Carolina coming to Homewood next Saturday at 1 o'clock on ESPN3. And, they look to be underdogs again in that game.
We'll talk about the Tar Heels in a second because you got an opportunity to see them up close and personal. But we'd be remiss not to talk a little bit about this Greyhound offense. Kevin Lindley had 4 goals. Adam Poitras and Aiden Olmstead both had 2 goals and an assist. And then you mentioned McNulty. He had a goal. Peter Swindell rounded out the scoring. There's certainly going to need to be an emergence of depth in that scoring, particularly from the midfield. They committed 15 turnovers, which is not something that you want to see. There were a couple of things that really impressed me within the Loyola ecosystem. So call it the coaching staff and folks that are really familiar with the program. They love Kevin Lindley. And I think Kevin Lindley is an incredibly good off-ball player and lefty shooter. But it's always been, whenever I would say that, I would hear, no, he can dodge. You don't know. You don't see it in practice and all this other stuff. And he got a goal off the dribble last night that looked like what I have been being told about for a couple of years. And I don't think that he's going to emerge as, a dodging threat to the level of Pat Spencer or even to the level of Aiden Olmstead. But for right now, this Loyola offense is about just allowing the new contributors enough time, scoring enough goals such that the new contributors can get game experience without being relied on to produce. And when Lindley is scoring off the dodge, that's what you get. On the flip side, it's interesting to see Garrett Degnan have another good game. Even Evan Zinn played pretty well, but ultimately Cole Williams completely blanked by LeBlanc, who I believe was making his first start in his career, the junior. And that level of inconsistency is going to be a problem for the Blue Jays if they can't find You know, it is a difficult question for me to answer because I'm trying to decide how much of this is a function of Joey Epstein is the guy who's supposed to carry so much of this burden, and he wasn't there to do it. And so if he is there, a lot of this other stuff kind of solves itself out. Guys find their roles, they're playing in situations that they're better suited for. But now I think the question of how long this injury is going to linger becomes preeminent relative to Johns Hopkins' future prospects.
You know, apparently Joey Epstein practiced all week. He was cleared to play. And then when you see him out there and you see what he was able to do, it's kind of head shaking. Like, you know, he was cleared. His lateral movement and ability to change directions and cut was not there. And I think he pressed a little because of that. But for Cole Williams to get bagels against a relatively unknown defender, it really tells a tale. There's no way Hopkins is going to win that game unless Cole Williams, he's got to be the best offensive player on the field in the absence of Epstein with the youth of Evan Zinn and the absence of Concannon. So that didn't happen. I think going forward for both teams, I'm still looking for some midfield production from Loyola. Okay. They got a couple decent guys who are step down shooters. Swindell has caught my eye so far this season with his ability to rip it from the outside. Logan Devereaux has hit some shots as well. But we still need to see guys who can break it down off the dodge. And big picture, tough day for the Big Ten. I mean, it was a horrendous day for the Big Ten. Thankfully for that conference, Maryland rallied to beat Penn, but otherwise it was disastrous. And suddenly now the Patriot League, Lehigh gave a good game to Virginia. Army's the hottest team in the country, and Loyola seems to be maybe better than we thought. So the Patriot League is looking like a very competitive and interesting grouping.
Well, you got eyes on another Patriot League team as you called North Carolina's 24-8 win over Lafayette. And we're going to talk about the Tar Heels in the context of their being Johns Hopkins' next opponent. They got big days out of Chris Gray, 3 goals and 4 assists. Nicky Solomon, 2-5, and the scoring kind of went down from there. Alex Trippi, 4-1. Tanner Cook, 4 goals. What did you take away from the Tar Heels? And now as they are 3-0 and facing, you know, what looks to be a test that's another level from what they've seen so far this year. What do you kind of see on both sides of this coin?
Yeah, Heels are, what, 3-0. They've beaten teams ranked preseason 50, 68, and 71. Now the real tests come. Love this offense. I mean, they roll out six that are as good as anyone in the country with Gray. And now Nicky Solomon's doing a great job playing off of Chris Gray. Brian Cameron on the left wing. And then the first midfield line of Perry, Justin Anderson, and Tanner Cook, the big lefty seniors, all of them seniors. So that's a scary group. Their second attack, I'll write about it in my column this week. I think their second attack could start for most teams in the country. Lance Tillman, Alex Trippi, and Jacob Kelly. Really athletic second midfield, and they're deep there too. They got six guys they can turn to. I love everything I'm seeing on offense. I thought they were maybe looking for the home run play a little too much against Lafayette, especially in the second quarter. It was a shaky 15 minutes, but then they resoundingly responded in the third quarter to put the game out of reach quickly. Major question marks on defense, though. Okay, you lose Evan Egan. He's out for the year. Cam Macri switches from shorty to pole to close. He's a starter. Will Bowen's coming off the injury. He played very well the other day and looks good. Your shorties are pretty young. Matt Wright, I thought, did a nice job, the freshman from Hill Academy, as their second pole. And Caton Johnson wasn't his typical self the other day. I think he'll be fine. He's an excitable kid. And in a game like that against Lafayette, I just don't think that the adrenaline is pumping through his veins, and he just didn't look like himself. But this team right now, in my eyes, is one-dimensional. They're all offense. Zach Tucci is the fire starter at the faceoff X. He's very good. But if you force Carolina to play defense, I think right now you can score on them.
So does that suggest that the way that Johns Hopkins can beat North Carolina is they have to get an incredible defensive performance in order to slow down that Tar Heel offense and hope to win an 11-10 game?
Well, or you know, I think Carolina's going to play in a lot of high-scoring games this year. I think the Heels are going to be involved in games in the teens, especially in conference. And, you know, it'll be interesting. I think they'll get better defensively, but it's really hard to tell defensively when you're playing the teams that they've opened up with, you know, Colgate, Lafayette, and Mercer. So still a work in progress is basically the way I look at it.
Well, let's shift out west where the Duke Blue Devils topped the Denver Pioneers 15-13. They jumped out to an 8-2 lead. Owen Caputo was the leading scorer with 3 goals and 3 assists. For the Pioneers, Jack Hanna had 6-1. Ethan Walker joined the Denver club of 200-point scorers, a very elite group that he is now currently situated alongside. certainly one of the more meaningful results or statistics. Jordan Ginder won 18 of 28 faceoffs. And I also thought it was interesting. Both teams played two goalies in this game as well. And we've now completed this triangle where Air Force upset Duke in Durham in week zero. The Denver Pioneers head down to Colorado Springs and hand the Falcons a loss on their home field. And then here we have the Blue Devils traveling out to Peter Barton Stadium. So each team has beaten the other, and they have done it all on the road, which I think is an interesting wrinkle. But as far as the Blue Devils are concerned, you know, they were a team that was probably in the back half of the top 10 in the preseason, certainly lost to Air Force in a game that a lot of people chalked up as to Duke being Duke. And now I think there's still a question as to exactly how good Denver is, but there's no question that going on the road and winning at altitude is a important and meaningful result. And to put up 15 goals and, you know, build an 8-2 lead and hold on to it, that's an impressive showing for John Donowski's team.
Absolutely. They were ready to rock and roll off the plane. 8-2 lead. They won all sorts of faceoffs in the first quarter against Stathakis, the freshman from Denver. So that's a good sign. They dominated the first quarter 16-3 in shots. I was interested to see, you know, Duke continues to play a ton of people. They played 33 members of the roster. So there's a lot of growth potential here. You mentioned Turner Upgren and Andrew Bonafide split time. Braden Burke has started the last two games at close defense. They've made some subtle adjustments there. They're pretty young defensively. Will Frizzoli scored a goal in the prior game. He's a freshman long pole. And we're also seeing Tyler Carpenter play a pole as well. And he was really productive in their prior game. But Owen Caputo, 6 points from him. And the offense is good. Again, it's going to be a midfield-oriented offense. The ball's not going to be spending much time behind the goal. But my question marks are really on the defensive end. And we'll see how they look once ACC play starts, or even this weekend, because fans in Charlotte won't want to miss Penn and Duke. That's Matthews Sportsplex on Saturday.
That's a big game, and let's just kind of transition to talk about the other half of that game, because Maryland hosted the Quakers in their season opener and beat Penn 17-15. It was their third straight comeback win. Anthony DeMeo got the go-ahead game-winning goal. Chris Brandow made 19 saves for the Terps, and certainly that was a difference, as his counter number, Patrick Bergenshaw, made just 9 saves. 10 different Terps registered a point, and they were led by Jared Bernhardt offensively. I thought that for the Quakers, it was good to see Sean Lilly have 4 goals and 2 assists to kind of share the burden alongside Sam Hanley, who had 3-2, as did Dylan Gergar. And once again, you know, this is a Quakers team who started 0-3 last season and then went on a tear. And for me, you know, getting an opportunity to watch a little bit of this game before Maryland made their surge late in the game, I saw a Penn team that I was like, there is very little, if any, regression. This is a Penn team that is as good as the quarterfinal team that we saw last year.
Couple things going forward. Hearing rumors that Sam Hanley may have some injury issues. You know, log on to InsideTheCross.com as this week matures and to see what his status is. That would be really catastrophic. I think he's one of the top 5 middies in the country easily. You know, Penn, Reed Junkin's gone. Birkinshaw made there was a critical mistake made on a pipe shot where Penn could have gone up 16-9. Instead, the ball ricocheted to midfield. Wisnowskis sends up scoring, and that starts the 8-0 run. And how rare is an 8-0 run? I mean, teams don't come from 5 and 6 goals is usually the furthest they come from behind. So this was a comeback of epic and monumental proportions. And the way Maryland's done that now twice this season, they did it towards the end of last year, I believe, once also. That gives him faith, you know, when they start winning faceoffs. I thought Justin Shockey came in late in the game and did a great job against Kyle Gallagher to generate some of those extra possessions. So Penn question marks going forward would be between the pipes, would be Hanley's health. But as you said, they look very much the same from a year ago.
And certainly one of the things that is going to be similar is that tough schedule, as you talked about. You know, Penn is a team that over the last decade has cracked the formula for the RPI. If Penn is good, they are going to finish at least top 10, if not more likely in more years, top 5 in RPI. And certainly by opening up with a game against Maryland, and as you mentioned, scoring up against Duke, that is going to continue in the future as well. So just
this is, yeah, no,
it's a Penn team that's not going away, is what I'm
Duke,
saying.
Maryland, Duke, Penn State, Nova to open the season. And I was also, you know, Nova caught my eye while I mentioned them. I watched them on tape and they're lost to Penn State. Nova's got a great offense. I mean, Connor Kearse, Keegan Conn, and Matt Campbell, those guys can absolutely score on anybody. They're scheduled too early. Penn State, Yale, Maryland, then three on the road, Hofstra, an improved Delaware team at Penn. So Nova may take some losses early in the season, but let's not forget that they have the offense to make noise in the Big East.
Well, let's talk about that game because Yale also opened their season with an 18-12 win over Villanova. You talk about comebacks, you talk about goal runs, breaking things open. This was a game that was tied 11-11, and then the Bulldogs scored seven of the game's next eight goals. Thomas Bragg was the breakout star with four goals and two assists. Lucas Kotler had 4-1. Matt Gaudette had 4-1. Matt Brandau had 3-3. Jackson Morrill had three goals for the Wildcats. A three-goal, four-assist day for Colin Crowley, and four goals and an assist for Connor Kearse, as you mentioned. The Wildcats looked for something in that fourth quarter when they started to lose the rope a little bit and decided to change goalies. Will Vinton had played. He had made five stops and allowed 15 goals. They brought in Brendan Haggerty to end out the game, and he made two stops while letting in three. Brody Wilson started in net for the Bulldogs. He made 13 saves. That's a notable change from Jack Starr in prior years. And I thought he played okay. I didn't think he played great. He certainly played better late, and that was when the Bulldogs started to separate. And I thought that you could probably say something similar about T.D. Erland as well. I didn't think that he was dominant throughout. And, you know, for the Bulldogs, I think there's kind of a survive and advance type component to this because, you know, I think they like where they're at. But at the same time, you know, as is true for every Ivy League team, they're getting started later than everybody else. And I think they're in a position where it's like, all right, once we get our sea legs, we get a game under our belts, then we'll reassess. We'll figure out what we need to do in these game situations and move forward.
Yeah, it's a big advantage. And the Ivies, you know, just to survive with a win week one, I don't give Yale any demerits for this win at all. Congratulations to T.D. Erland, all-time career ground ball leader now with over 762 grounders.
I missed that. Wow, good for him. That's impressive.
Yeah, and counting. And then Bragg was the guy in practice last year.
Yeah, so you know, loved him.
We were at Yale a couple times. I'm like, I wrote about him last year. I'm like,
is he the olive oil kid?
He's 6'4", 200, Casanova. and Andy Shea goes to, he goes, that's the next, you know, that's our Ben Reeves. You know, we found him in upstate New York and no one else really noticed the kid. How could you miss him? He's 6'4", 200 and he can absolutely shoot. And Yale made Nova pay for undisciplined defense. They went 5 of 7 on the extra man.
Let's just quickly round up the rest of the Ivy League. Cornell made their debut with a 19-10 win over Albany. I didn't get an opportunity to basically get anything from this game. You've got any notes on it?
No, I just think Cornell's a lot better than people realize. I think, remember last year they were ranked like fifth preseason and they couldn't play defense, couldn't win a faceoff. They were 34%.
Yep.
I think I'm investing in Cornell. Like if there's stock market for teams right now, I'm buying Army, Delaware, and Cornell as we speak, because I think those teams are, you know, as you said, under the radar. We are the radar, so they're no longer under the radar.
We will get to Army in a little bit, but Princeton 20, Monmouth 9, a nice debut for the Tigers, who are borderline top 20 team. Brown 11, Quinnipiac 7, and Dartmouth 13, Merrimack 11. So a good day. You talk about conference good days and bad days. A good day for the Ivy League as they got their season underway.
Yeah, and stacked this year. It really is. I think Brown's going to be a little better as well. And Princeton with Michael Sowers, you can watch them on TV this weekend. Saturday, I believe they play Virginia on the ACC network. Michael Sowers and company, you know, often fans don't get to watch him play. This is a great opportunity. And I think he'll have some success against Virginia's defense, Princeton at Virginia. TV game this weekend.
So we've teased it a couple times, but the Army Black Knights, 15-4 victors over Rutgers, a Rutgers team that was 2-0 coming in. Army now 3-0 on the year, and Wyatt Scupler, who was outrageously good last week, had another incredible day. 16 saves, 2 goals allowed, as Coach Joe Alberici's squad ran away with a laugher.
Friday afternoon, I had some time when I got to Chapel Hill before Cotter arrived, before we went out to dinner, a great dinner at 411 West, a Valentine's Day dinner between me and Chris. But I got a chance, I plugged in UMass Army highlights, and I wrote about it in my column this week. this is by far the most skillful Army offense that I have ever seen. And I've been watching Army. My brother went to Navy, so I've been watching Army since the early 1980s. I mean, Brendan Nickturn is as good of a player that's ever played at West Point. Okay, and now, but he's surrounded by guys who are really good. Connor DeWitt impressed me. They got a big sophomore named Bobby Abshire. He impressed me. And the saves that I saw from the sophomore Wyatt Schupter in that game against UMass were really athletic. This kid is super light on his feet. He bounces around. He looks the part. Army has always played great defense. Maybe this is the year they put it all together. Now, obviously, we're still in February. Army's gotten off to some strong starts in the past. The question with me and Army is going to be sustaining over the grind, over the long season. Their schedule, they could have a great record at the end of the year. You know, they got a big game against Cuse coming up on Sunday. After that, it's not really tough non-conference. And so they play Notre Dame late in the year in April. Other than that, it's mostly Patriot League and not ranked opponents. So there's not much room for them to slip up because of their schedule, but opportunity this Sunday in the dome against Cuse.
So you mentioned Brendan Nickturn, and he's a player who I have tried to watch whenever I've had the opportunity over the last 2 years, because it's interesting that you say that about being the most skilled player at West Point, you know, in whatever span of time, because it's actually interesting. I was thinking about it. And I'm like, all right, so, you know, between John Glessner most recently, and then, a Wharton finalist at the beginning in that 2010-11 season, whose name is currently escaping me. They've had a number of star offensive
stars.
Players.
Yes.
But John Walker in the middle part of the previous decade.
That's right. But what stands out here is there's a depth of talent here that I'm not sure they've ever had.
Exactly.
I mentioned two guys. Well, I didn't even mention Miles Silva, 39 goals last year. Sean O'Brien, 30 points last year. Matt Manown, game-winning goal against Navy last year. I mean, this is a deep group. Army second midfield historically hasn't been great. I think this group is productive. So this is the most dangerous Army team I've seen offensively. And they're still putting up just incredible numbers so far defensively against UMass and Rutgers.
Well, and we would be remiss not to mention Jacob Morin, who had 5 goals in that win over Rutgers as well. So, yeah, keep your eye on Army. They are shaping up to, as you say, not only have a showdown against Syracuse on Sunday, but potentially a good season in store. One other game that I want to draw particular attention to, it was one of the first big results of Saturday, and it was Mount St. Mary's 11, Towson 10. The Tigers, we talked about last week as being a team that was going to need the first 6 weeks of the season to come together and figure out who they are and work out all the kinks after losing so many players to graduation last year. And, we saw those limitations in their lost to Johns Hopkins in their season opener, and I was on hand to see their 13-1 halftime deficit to Virginia in a scrimmage the week prior, and it manifested itself once again. Matt Haggerty, 4 goals. Kelly Gouin, Brendan McCarthy, and Luke Frankeny, all with 3 points. Dylan Fernbach, 12 saves. And really, it was just kind of one of those all-around performances. One of the big, you know, kind of eye-opening stats, Towson got just 4 saves in this game.
Yeah, and Canto's struggling right now. Brennan has been injured. Not sure what his status is, but Mount St. Mary's potentially becomes a player in the NEC West with Robert Morris. I think Hobart is a standout in that league. Hobart's a team that I got trying to sneak into my top 20, but big win for the Mount. Congratulations. You know, we saw flashes last year. Mount plays Hopkins now on a weekday game. This year's game is on Tuesday, March 10. I'll be covering it on TV. They had flashes in that game where they stood toe-to-toe with the Blue Jays, so this doesn't surprise me. But if you're Towson, this is another reason to like Delaware, quite honestly. I mean, if you were unimpressed with Towson, it just opens the door in the CAA for a team like Delaware, and give UMass credit. You know, while we're talking CAA, they bounced back from really a woeful effort against Army to beat Ohio State in what's a very meaningful game. It's a bounce back game that can really change the trajectory and the attitude of their team now going forward.
Yeah, I wanted to touch on that one briefly because for me, just being able to follow the score as I was paying attention to other games, the thing that stood out was just it was an incredibly low scoring game in a season where we haven't seen very many low scoring games. And so I wasn't able to take very much away from that and wanted to sink my teeth into it later. Was there anything aside from the fact that obviously it's a nice rebound performance for the Minutemen or a setback for the
Just
Buckeyes that you're going to be paying attention to?
Ohio State's play. Yeah, well, remember Ohio State against BU just lost the faceoff battle. So possessions have not come in great supply without Justin Inacio, their faceoff guy. And it just seems like they're playing 2008 slowdown lacrosse at Ohio State. They're just not capable of getting involved in these scoring games. They have a top group, I think, that's pretty talented. With with some decent guys like LeClaire and Jackson Reed but I'm just not sure what's there. And so that was really disappointing to me because if you can't score in this day and age in lacrosse, you don't have a shot. I mean, we learned that last year. Possessions are up like 27%. Goal scoring was up 11%. You got to get to 10 minimum. I mean, getting to 10 no longer guarantees you're going to win games.
One last game I wanted to mention, Notre Dame 17, Cleveland State 7. The Fighting Irish make their debut. Pat Cavanaugh, the freshman attackman, younger brother of Matt, had 3 goals and 4 assists. He's wearing number 51. I like that one more than his older brother. Brian Costabile had 4 goals. Leon Entman made the start in net and had 8 saves. Matt Schmidt came on and made 6 stops and allowed 5 goals.
They played in Loftus, the Thunderdome, where the Irish are virtually unbeatable. Brian Costabile continues his hot hand in season openers. This is a Notre Dame team that's really good. I mean, really good. And I like their balance. There's not too many teams you can point to nationally and say they got a really good defense. They got a really good offense. And Notre Dame might be that team this year.
They host Richmond next Saturday. Keep an eye on that one, as certainly the Spiders are coming off of both a win over Marist and still that stinging disappointment against Maryland in their season opener, double overtime loss. The Dan Shamati's team beat Notre Dame in South Bend, I believe. Or no, that game might have been in Richmond last year. Either way, they beat Notre Dame in 2019. So a revenge game for Notre Dame. Quint, what else you got your eye on as we turn our attention to week 3, I guess, of the college lacrosse season?
Yeah. Well, as we spin things forward, the monstrous game next weekend on BTN, Dixie's got the call, is Penn State hosting Yale. And you get the feeling, from what, a 14-13 game last year and a 21-17 game last year, you get the feeling that this could be Penn State's day. Grant Amant and Mack O'Keefe, the offense, Dylan Folds had a bunch of goals the other day. There's just talent all over the place. And, Yale's, again, at a disadvantage. Having started their season a little later. So all signs, Panzer, to me, point to Penn State in that epic matchup. I've got Hopkins, North Carolina, ESPN3 on Saturday. And we've also got, as I said earlier, Virginia and Princeton, which is a good opportunity to see Michael Sowers.
Well, you're blowing up, so we're going to let you get back to all of the inbound text messages. I'm sure it's a lot of information around who's injured, who's going to be coming back. So as you mentioned, make sure to check out InsideLacrosse.com. We had an epic day on the website on Saturday. The biggest page view day in the history of the website. So certainly we're looking to keep that momentum rolling.
Yeah, support the game. Watch games, go to games. There was a couple games this weekend that had 2,000 fans, which is good. I know the weather's icky, but it looks like it'll be okay in the Northeast again next week. Just for instance, Terry, last night I was watching BTN wrestling and 16,000 at Penn State for a wrestling match, 13,000 at Iowa for a wrestling match. If lacrosse is going to compete, if lacrosse is going to step up, into that upper echelon, we got to start supporting games.
We got a long way to go, but we'll be there every step of the way. Quint, thanks again for joining me on the Quick Restart podcast. Everybody have a great President's Day and a great week, and we'll be back next week to talk about the week 3 action.
We are whistle ready at the Quick Restart podcast. Like that? Whistle ready.